Let's dive into how the Srivijaya Empire became Southeast Asia's first major maritime power. Dr. Chang, could you explain how this transformation took place?
Certainly, Srivijaya emerged around 650 CE as the Funan Empire waned, founded by the Sailendra dynasty. They understood the sea lanes, essential links between China, India, and the Middle East. This strategic position fostered their initial rise.
And control over sea routes really was crucial, wasn't it? There's a modern analogy to be made with Panama or Suez Canal today.
Absolutely, just like those pivotal zones, Srivijaya commanded the Straits of Malacca and Sunda. With control over these maritime choke points, they dictated international commerce, much like today's major shipping lanes.
Yet with such advantages, they still faced challenges. How did Srivijaya maintain its dominance despite competition?
They adeptly formed alliances and employed a thalassocracy, ruling by sea, not land. But unlike land empires, this left them vulnerable to shifts like the Chola dynasty's interference later on.
Moving on, could you share insights into Srivijaya's economic prowess? Their control over trade routes seems key, but there's more to their economy, right?
Indeed, Srivijaya's economy thrived on spice trade, collecting duties at the straits. Their trading network mirrored the Silk Road, except across seas, linking China and India's riches.
Those extensive connections sound strikingly modern, akin to today's global trade networks. Yet, were there any drawbacks to this economic model?
Good point. They solely relied on sea dominance, leaving them susceptible to competitors and piracy. It's like putting all your eggs in one basket. They were rich, but vulnerable to disruption.
Given such risks, how did they innovate to sustain trade dominance?
They cultivated international alliances, like with China's Tang dynasty, exchanging not just goods but knowledge. Such strategies are reminiscent of modern diplomatic trade agreements that safeguard economic interests.
Shifting focus from trade to culture, Srivijaya was a beacon of Buddhist learning. Professor Singh, how did it shape Buddhism in Southeast Asia?
Srivijaya embraced Mahayana Buddhism, drawing scholars across Asia. Yijing's accounts describe vibrant religious study akin to how cities today are hubs for tech or academia.
That ancient cultural exchange must have been vibrant. Yet, was there tension integrating diverse religious philosophies?
Indeed, they balanced Buddhist, Hindu, and animist beliefs, somewhat unusual then. This syncretism was both a strength and a challenge, generating rich, yet sometimes conflicting, spiritual traditions.
In embracing such diversity, how did Srivijaya influence future cultural landscapes?
Their syncretic approach laid the groundwork for the region's spiritual tapestry. Today's Southeast Asia reflects these layered beliefs, much like cities that combine modernity with tradition.
Lastly, let's discuss Srivijaya's decline. Mr. Harris, what precipitated its fall from power over the centuries?
Its decline began with the 11th century Chola raids, much like economic sanctions impact nations today. Internal strife and emerging powers such as Khmer also eroded their influence.
Despite their decline, their legacy endures. What lasting impacts have they made on the region that we see today?
Srivijaya's influence persists in Buddhism spread across Southeast Asia, akin to how Roman infrastructure underpins Europe. Their trade networks formed precursor models for global maritime commerce.
Indeed, it's fascinating that such a once-dominant power helped shape modern regions. Could modern nations learn from Srivijaya's story?
Absolutely. Their integration of cultural ideas and maintaining nimble strategies across borders holds lessons. Future interconnected economies might look back at Srivijaya as an early model of global stewardship.